From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, July 13th, 2010. Each week, this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in San Diego, California.
And this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief, also in San Diego.
We are covering the 2010 ESRI International User Conference, and this week our podcast will look at our reaction to this year's plenary session, which typically sets the agenda for the rest of the week. I described the plenary this way in a blog post. The ESRI UC 2010 plenary was short on jaw-dropping announcements, but solid in message. ArcGIS is a complete system for GIS, and you should use it. We'll share our reactions after a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Erdos, the Earth to Business Company. Erdos helps organizations harness the information of the changing Earth for greater advantage. With our industry-leading desktop and server solutions, you can tackle every step of your geospatial data processing workflow with ease and speed. Experience it for yourself. Try out Erdos Apollo, our enterprise data management and delivery solution, by visiting demo.erdos.com.
Okay, Joe, so we sat through about 4 hours of information this morning. And as usual, there was a parade of people coming up on stage. There were people speaking. There were demos. There was some technology vision discussion. And I think the key idea that I came away with was this concept that ArcGIS has sort of grown from being a product or even a series of products or a family of products to this complete system so that GIS can be used virtually everywhere. And John Calkins made the comment that Scott Morehouse and Clint Brown had used the analogy of it. We're doing GIS the way we do music now, which is that we have our music and we can have it on our computers or on our phones or on our iPods, and it's sort of accessible wherever we happen to be. And GIS is going to be the same way. Is that something you saw as well?
I think what I took away from that session was that, and this was made clear by John Calkins, was that this complete system, whether it's desktop, server, web, or mobile, is going to be transparent to the end user, that it shouldn't be just one of the, it shouldn't be a conscious effort that I'm using desktop systems right now, right? I shouldn't be conscious that it's a mobile device or I'm inputting or getting data from the mobile device, but that to me, it is all one thing. It's all coming from one source. And I don't know if people grasp that in the audience. I'm not sure the analogy of iTunes works. But to me, the technology is being advanced to the point where maybe it is being transparent to the user. Maybe because so much of it, so much of what we do today is on the web, that it's vanishing. This notion of platform, as Jack Dangerman described, and that he described those four platforms of desktop, server, web, and mobile, kind of are becoming transparent, such that it doesn't really matter anymore. It's not a conscious decision by the user. It is a complete system.
Yeah, and I think you used a word that I don't think I heard this morning, which was transparent. And again, I thought the iTunes analogy was a little bit clumsy, because until we get this locker, until we get this cloud storage space for our music, which I know is coming, it's not quite the same. So that's certainly one of the key ideas, and an awful lot of the time was spent showing how you could do the same thing on the desktop or on a mobile device or on an iPad, just trying to get that idea through.
Right, and it's not revolutionary, it's evolutionary. I think with every year there's a progression, and I think the technology platforms are progressing that allows geographic information systems to progress to a certain level. And I think that what Dangerman et al. Are trying to do is raise that awareness that we've now gotten to the point where all of this stuff can be exposed transparently. The platforms kind of don't matter, although they do, but kind of they don't want you to think of them so much anymore.
We talk about sometimes there are big years for lots of announcements, and there are years that are sort of, okay, everybody take a breather, relax, and let's move into it. This felt an awful lot more like the latter. And I think a lot of the reason was because a lot of these products, the iOS application, for instance, were announced before the conference. People had already downloaded it, played with it, were familiar with it, knew it was coming. So I think that was really a good choice for this year.
Yeah, and if people read us or follow what we do, a lot of this in terms of ArcGIS 10, we discussed after the FedUC in February. So some of these things are already leaked out to the users by the time we get to the UC.
Right, and many users already have their ArcGIS 10 installed.
Right.
So that definitely was the case. What else did you see watching the plenary this morning?
And it's interesting because I had the good fortune of attending the Senior Executive Summit, and the tone of that meeting was very business-oriented. And I thought coming to this plenary session, we might hear more of that same tone, and I did not hear that. It really was pretty much business as usual. You get the same kind of GIS and apple pie presentation. I do think that there is a change at Esri. I think that they are putting business value, which is their catchword here, ahead of more visionary stuff, and they're trying to put forth an idea of GIS for a return on investment, making senior executives see the business value in a system like geographic information. I didn't hear that, but I do think that's there as an undertone.
It was there exactly once. They didn't say business value, but it was the gentleman from Denver County, Washington, who was illustrating how to use Python to automate processes. And it was a really nifty little application that he showed that was, they had, if I remember correctly, he said they had tried to do this in ArcObjects and they couldn't do it. And then they could do it in Python. They're sort of an early adopter of this Python implementation. And they could automate this process of creating this $50 packet for people who are going to develop property in the county.
Right.
And they sell 1,000 of these a year.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff that they do.
Right. So they can basically create a custom packet by pushing a button, which causes all these Python scripts to run. So that was very elegant. But that was really the only, to me, that's ROI, anything more than that. It was the only time that really came up.
I do think what is happening is that we are being called more and more to justify what it means on a departmental level. Some of the things that Roger Tomlinson said yesterday at the Executive Summit, I think it's important to review here, is he said whenever he is called to do a presentation, to do consulting, what he says immediately is, forget about the cool technology aspect of it. Now tell me what's going to be the end result for your department. Tell me what you want to get, because you know what? You're fighting for resources at your department level. So explain to me what the business value is going to be for GIS at your department level. And before you take it out to the grand masses, or before you think that maps are real cool, you better have a good understanding of the return on investment.
Right, and that discussion didn't really happen in the plenary. And
no.
That's an interesting dichotomy. One other big theme that kept sort of popping up in many different places was crowdsourcing. And I did hear the term volunteer geographic information, VGI, as well. I know people have different strong feelings about one term over the other. And that sort of popped up in three different places, I think, in this morning's sessions. First of all, the very first demo was from a company called CitySourced, which has one of these phone-based and web-based apps where you can report issues in your community and then have them routed to the right department to get them fixed. It's kind of a 3-1-1 via GIS, which I think most people have seen, as there's other players that do that. And while the demo was pleasant, none of the issues related to crowdsourcing were brought up then or in a discussion later that had to do with apps related to the Gulf oil spill. So I was a little bit disappointed that was still sort of held up as crowdsourcing is great, but we're not sort of getting to best practices and lessons learned yet. It feels like we should be moving along more quickly on that. The other crowdsourcing discussion came up around what I guess are now being called community base maps, which we talked about in a previous podcast, which is ESRI's vision for creating a number of base maps worldwide of data contributed by users and potentially mixed in with other commercial and other data to create these authoritative data sources. And the difference with this discussion of crowdsourcing is that it was going to be crowdsourced from the GIS professional, the authoritative source. And that's a really important idea and selling point. Unfortunately, when we went to actually learn more about the community base maps, the demo sort of seemed to get sidetracked into ArcGIS and then into ArcGIS Explorer Online, so I'm afraid some of the details didn't get get shared.
I think we're in the early stages of at least what Esri is trying to do in terms of promoting community-based mapping and having individual communities, municipalities, whatever, contribute to the community-based maps program. I think it's early days for this, and I'm not quite sure Esri has the full story worked out. I think it's a good idea.
Barney Krukoff from Washington, D.C. was the person to get up and be the proponent of the community-based mapping because D.C. has already contributed its data. The last big thing I wanted to talk about was this rebranding, and there's sort of two sets of rebranding going on, one having to do with ESRI, all in capital letters, changing over to being ESRI with a capital E in the name of the company, and then all small letters in the logo. That's one change in branding. The other change in branding has to do with the spoken use of ESRI, which is now acceptable both as ESRI and Esri, or as Jack Dangerman seems to say it, Esri. And all of those things sort of happened with no real discussion about the why, at least not yet. I mean, maybe that's coming. Now, how did that strike you?
I thought the reaction of the audience was rather strange in the plenary session. Jack says, well, what do you think, Esri or ESRI? And I quote, I don't really care. You can call it what you want, which, again, and there was applause by one little segment of the audience there. And I thought that was rather strange. I think some of the users may be confused by the changing.
Jack's comment made me think that, in a sense, ESRI has been, you know, pushing back the ocean, trying to get people to say ESRI. Yeah. And I was sort of, in a sense, throwing up his hands and saying, okay.
Do what you want.
And when it comes to the actual name of the company, I think moving to this sort of mixed capitalization is basically saying we're moving away from that being an abbreviation for Environmental Systems Research Institute in the same way that AT&T no longer stands for American Telecom and Telegraph and Telecom, whichever way that worked.
American Telegraph.
Or the IBM, mm-hmm. right? You move to the acronym and the words themselves go away. Now, why does a company make that transition?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We don't have the definitive answer to that. What I might suggest is this a move, going back to my comment about business value, to make it more acceptable in the business community, to make it more acceptable in the IT domain? Because we see some of these things going on with companies rebranding themselves. Maybe it's a move towards that, to being more of an acceptable branding strategy.
That makes it sort of more IT than changing the world,
right.
Bunnies and
right,
forests.
Again, GIS and apple pie, you know, type of thing.
Right, versus a real high-tech company that's going to solve your problems and save you money.
Right, again, going back to what Jack has been saying for the last couple of years, which is GIS is now in the mainstream. Well, the mainstream, if you're talking about mainstream IT, you know, talks business. I mean, to be quite honest, Jack holds a very unique position here in our industry. This is a large company. I mean, Esri is almost a $1 billion company. It's one of the largest independent software companies in the world, and it's playing in a huge IT marketplace. And again, it's my interpretation that what's happening is it wants to play more in that mainstream IT space.
That's all the time we have for today.
This podcast was brought to you by Erdos, the Earth to Business company. Backed by more than 30 years of experience working with geospatial data and expert users like you, Erdos is still shaping the future of the geospatial industry with cutting-edge products like Apollo on the Cloud. All the power and speed of Erdos Apollo Professional are now available in a monthly subscription service with no hassles, no commitment, and upfront pricing with no surprises. For more information, please visit www.erdas.com. That's www.erdas.com.
If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can email us at editors@directionsmag.com or leave a comment at Directions Magazine or All Points Blog. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.